You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 193, by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Problems of Society, An Esoteric View, From Luciferic Past to Ahrimanic Future. 10 lectures, excuse me, I've said 9 before, but there are 10 lectures in this, translated by Matthew Barton. This is Lecture 5, given in Heidenheim on the 12th of June, 1919. We live in a time in which people might recognize, if they wished, what anthroposophic spiritual science has been seeking to achieve for many years. It would actually be the very finest fruit of anthroposophic endeavor if in the hearts and souls of those involved in this movement a conviction could arise that the fiery signs of our time offer proof of the need for these long-term endeavors. Whatever turbulent outward events occur in the world, whatever form is taken by things seeking to work their way out of the underdepths of human evolution, we only really hearken to the true underlying nature of these events, which escapes the notice of ordinary human perception, if we observe the world from a spiritual perspective. I would like to start today with one such phenomenon, which is scarcely noticed under the tumult of events. It is regarded as something unimportant and of little concern. Yet those who have drawn on spiritual foundations to acquire an ability to see life's reality will accord it all due weight. For the past 7 or 8 years, this may sound paradoxical, but it is true, children have been born with a quite different countenance from before. People fail to notice it, giving little heed to such things, giving little heed, in fact, to all the most important things in life. But if you have acquired the ability to observe such things, you will know that the faces of children born during the past 7, 8, or even 10 years betray something lackluster, like a wariness toward the world. We can discern this in the physiognomy of newborn children from the very first days after birth, and this is different from before. If we study this curious phenomenon, which may sound very paradoxical to people today, we find that the souls of children who have entered the world at birth, who pass through conception and birth, already bear with them something that gives their countenance a melancholic stamp, however much they smile. The faces of newborn infants used not to bear this quality. And in their souls, quite unconsciously, of course, lives a mood of reluctance to enter life. The souls being born today, as I said, this has been true for around 10 years now, feel something like a hindrance and constraint in entering this physical world. Before we enter the physical world, passing through conception and birth, we experience an important occurrence in the world of spirit, which then shines its light ahead of it and has effects in the forthcoming life. Here on earth people die, pass through the portal of death, lay aside their physical body, and bring their souls into the world of spirit. The soul still bears within it the effects of all it experienced here in the physical world. In passing through the gate of death, basically, the soul looks like these effects themselves, like the experiences it underwent in earthly life. Having crossed the threshold of death, these souls encounter the souls who are preparing to descend into a physical body. This occurrence is a reality that I can only describe to you because it is available to the seer's experience and perception. It is an important thing, this encounter between the souls of those who have just died and those who will soon enter the physical world through the portal of birth. It sets a tone. In a sense, it infuses descending souls with an idea of what they might meet here. This encounter gives rise to the impulse that impresses an odd melancholy on the faces of infants from birth. They do not really wish to enter the world they have learned of through this encounter, for they are aware that their spiritual plumage will be badly ruffled by the experiences of a humanity plunged in a materialistic view of the world and immersed also in materialistic actions. This encounter, which of course we can only ascertain spiritually, also sheds a strong light on our whole modern era, which we can only properly understand by acknowledging such hidden phenomena. Yet this is something we must try to understand. This is something to start with, that can, of course, only be perceived through spiritual vision. But other phenomena today speak loud and clear to us and could be discernible without spiritual vision for anyone who does not sleepwalk through life. The global catastrophe of the past 4 or 5 years has had its dire impact on the world, and we keep looking back, as I think every wakeful soul must do today, to the palpable, perceptible origins of this terrible human catastrophe. We study the course it has taken and finally can examine what has emerged from it now on a worldwide scale. Here one thing ought to be apparent for anyone who is awake. Take the curious fact that this world war broke over Central Europe, and yet, and this is true, no one wishes to know what really gave rise to it. People wonder what its origins were, blame this party or that. But ultimately, whatever blame they assign, come to the conclusion that this was not the whole cause, that other factors must have been at work too. People say that a great social movement emerged from this catastrophic world war. Whether partisan or not, they try to understand what should now be done in these great social upheavals. And yet their thoughts relate to reality as an embalmed body does to life. Their mummified thoughts are not adequate to grapple with the turbulence of events, with its real nature. If we study these things more closely, now that a series of memoirs have been published by figures directly involved in the origins of the World War, we have to ask whether these people really took part in the events of 4 or 5 years ago that they describe. Did they really know what they were doing? Did they have any inkling of the scope of what their rational minds concocted? Increasingly, it must become apparent that they did not, as we see from the confession of Russian Minister Sukhomlinov. In his court testimony, in relation to the 3 or 4 hours during which he had to make his most vital decisions, he said that he must have lost his mind, that he must have been mad. Such phenomena tell us a great deal. They indicate that mental confusion reigned in the minds of many of those involved. Anyone equipped to see into the terrible nature of current world events will see, and increasingly people will see this, that the events originated less in moral failure than in an intellectual inability to understand world events. Things are still the same today. The majority of people are basically helpless in the face of these world events. And we have to ask very seriously indeed what this is due to. There is an underlying factor here that is extraordinarily difficult for our time to grasp, pervaded as it is by a materialistic outlook. Since the turning point in world history, when the materialistic worldview reached its highest tide, the strongest spiritual power that has ever sought to enter human life from the world of spirit, is seeking entry. This is the characteristic nature of our time. Since the beginning of the last third of the 19th century, the spirit, the world of spirit, is seeking to reveal itself to humankind in the strongest possible way. Yet, human beings have gradually reached a point in their evolution where they wish only to use the tool of their physical body to grasp anything. In their materialistic outlook, they have become accustomed to asserting the theory that the physical brain is the tool for thinking and even for feeling and will. They have persuaded themselves that the physical body is the tool for all spiritual and mental activity. It is not without reason that they have done so, for as human evolution progressed, people indeed gradually reached a state where they can only use the physical body as a tool for mental activity. Today, therefore, we find ourselves in the midst of a vitally important knot in human evolution, where the world of spirit seeks to reveal itself as if in tempest and turbulence. And on the other hand, people must find the strength to free themselves from the warp of materialism and work their way through to new receptivity to spiritual revelations. Today, humanity faces the greatest test of its powers, that of working its way freely and independently toward the Spirit, which will itself approach us if we do not close ourselves off from it. But the time is now past when the Spirit could reveal itself to us in all kinds of subconscious and unconscious processes. The time has come when we must receive the light of Spirit in our own free inward deed. And all the confusion and unclarity which people live in today is due to the fact that they now need to receive something which they do not yet wish to receive, an entirely new understanding of things. Old forms of thinking, the old way of surveying world events, came to expression in this dire, terrible world war. This catastrophe, with its hugely significant symptoms of coming disaster, is urging us to think differently, to seek new ways of seeing the world, since the old ways will end only in chaos and confusion. We must, finally, come to see that the leading figures in 1914 had arrived at a point where nothing more could be achieved through old kinds of comprehension, and that this is why they led humanity into misfortune. Today, people must inscribe this knowledge deep in their hearts, for otherwise they will not take the strong resolve to approach the living spirit out of their own free inner powers. In our immediate present, most worryingly, things are coming to expression that cannot be understood by means of the old world views and outlooks on life. And yet people still cling to them and refuse to entertain quite new ways of perceiving and thinking. The anthroposophic worldview has sought to prepare humanity to develop these new forms of seeing the world. The opposition to it has really been nothing other than people's inner sluggishness and laziness, the inability to collect the inmost powers of their soul and bring these toward the wave of spirit breaking upon us now so mightily. I said earlier that people accustomed themselves to using only their physical body in thinking, and this eventually led to the materialistic worldview. Now, there is something that it is essential to understand in our time. Nature can be understood by the methods which science is so triumphant about, by using the instrument of the physical brain, the physical body, altogether. But this instrument is not adequate for understanding human life. We can only comprehend it if we can raise ourselves to a form of thinking not drawn entirely from the physical body alone. and this can be cultivated through the anthroposophic worldview. Of course, people say they don't understand anthroposophic books and lectures, the worldview enshrined there. I can well believe it. But what does this failure to understand mean? It means simply that I wish only to use my physical brain to understand the world, that I do not wish to learn to think in any other way than by lazily settling back in the comfortable armchair of the physical brain. It is absolutely true that the anthroposophic worldview cannot be understood by those means. It is not that one has to be clairvoyant to understand it, but one does have to practice a form of thinking not bound to the physical brain. The content of anthroposophic literature, which can be comprehended with healthy common sense, gradually schools a kind of thinking, feeling, and will that is equal to today's tumultuous events. You can take this as you like, but it is true. The present day asks us no longer to grasp the world through the instrument of the physical body, but through the instrument of the etheric body, the level of our being which, as a body of formative forces, underlies and sustains the physical body. The great influx of spirit seeking to reveal itself to humanity comes to expression really only in very unconscious feelings in people, and they have an awful fear of it. Actually, when people say they don't understand spiritual science, this is only an excuse. The truth is, they are afraid of the revelations of the world of spirit, and it is only because they do not wish to acknowledge this fear that they say spiritual science is incomprehensible to them, or else that it is illogical, or some other evasion. In truth, they are afraid of it, and therefore resort to anything that enables them not to face the great and pressing problems of our time. How happy they are when they can evade the great tasks and riddles of modern life. They find it uncomfortable to hear about various urgent problems in the world today, although they quite happily attend plays by Ibsen where some of these problems come to light. But since this is just art, in quotes, they do not feel prompted to further concern. People find it uncomfortable to hear directly of the influx of the world of spirit into mundane reality. Bjornson, too, included such themes in his plays, and these could likewise be dismissed as merely aesthetic matters. People had an awful fear of addressing these things seriously, but all the while class conflicts were increasing, a gulf opening between the ruling classes and the proletariat. The social question presented riddles, and this was regarded as an uncomfortable subject for discussion. Yet people went to the theater and watched Hauptmann's title The Weavers, got a little inwardly exercised about the depths of human depravity portrayed there, but not seriously enough to take a stance on such matters. It was, after all, in quotes, just art. They escaped into something they did not need to take seriously, a characteristic trait in the contemporary psyche. And what underlies this characteristic phenomenon? That given the revelations of the world of spirit, they needed to try to take certain things seriously which cannot be comprehended by means of the instrument of the physical body alone, which can only be understood through imaginative powers, in the same way that art itself can only be understood in this way. The human physical body is a product of nature, while the human etheric body is like a work of art in form and pattern, really like a sculpture, except that it is in continual movement. What people otherwise accept in their enjoyment of art has to consolidate, grow brighter, and become serious vision, imagination, inspiration, intuition. And then people will understand what is trying to reveal itself to them today. Behind events, you see, lurks something that can only be spiritually comprehended. We must develop a deep awareness, a real feeling, that what is seeking to enter the contemporary world as spiritual revelation can only be comprehended through spiritual science itself. That is, through thinking, feeling, and inner impulses of will that can be schooled through the science of the spirit, and which unfold in the same region of life that artistic endeavor occupies, albeit often as mere reflection without serious content. A good many years ago, in a particular field, I tried to point to something that is of urgent necessity today. Naturally, it was not understood by the banal and philistine monstrosity that is called academia. My title, Philosophy of Freedom, published in 1894, contained a chapter entitled Moral Imagination. In terms of spiritual science, we could also say, quote, imaginative moral impulses, close quote. I tried to show that the domain, which is otherwise only imaginatively comprehended in art, must now necessarily be taken up seriously by humanity, since this is the level which people must attain in order to allow supersensible reality to inform them in a way the physical brain cannot grasp. At least in relation to our grasp of morality, in the early 1890s, I sought to show that comprehending the supersensible is an important and serious matter. We should have a sense of these things today, of the fact that thoughts, inner soul impulses, which came to expression in the catastrophic World War, and have continued into this time of social upheavals, are of no use anymore, that we need new impulses. But if one tries to introduce a new impulse today, this meets with incomprehension, for it is one drawn livingly from the world of spirit as a remedy to heal the disorders of our time. And in response to such a thing, people on both left and right squeak in dismay. From one political extreme to the other, they are united in a common chorus that this is not something they can fathom. Of course, they can't if they wish to stay with their old outmoded forms of thinking. This we should do no longer, but instead should reconfigure and reform our inner apprehension entirely. All outward revolutions, however much they accord with the desires of any party or class of society, will lead us up the creek and bring dire misery over humanity if they are not illumined by an inner revolution in the soul, by a will to depart from immersion in a purely materialistic worldview and open ourselves to the spiritual wave seeking to break over humanity as a new revelation. The revolution from matter to spirit is the only wholesome revolution, while all others are like childhood diseases, like scarlet fever, measles, and mere preliminaries to the re-establishment of a new health implicit in the emergence of spirit in modern life. Today we need a strong inner resolve if we are to be equal to what the times are asking of us. We should give full, serious credence to the reality of a world of spirit that seeks to break through into our own. Powers of spirit truly exist, and we should found our decisions, actions, and our whole thinking on them. This is what is being asked of us. Much is in flux and change at such times. And here I would like to point to another symptom that will again sound paradoxical, but which, perceived inwardly, spiritually, is of the very greatest importance. As you know from your studies of spiritual science, apart from our physical body and our etheric body, which I mentioned just now as an instrument we need to spiritually comprehend what may otherwise remain a mere reflection of reality in art, we also have our soul nature as such. We can call this the astral body, or whatever name you like. It is substantially more spiritual than the etheric body, and therefore is something from which, during the period of materialistic developments, people were still further removed than from the etheric body. You see, underlying the physical body, the etheric body has a kind of shape and form, albeit one in continual motion, while the astral body is intrinsically formless. In speaking of it, we are speaking really only pictorially, in a metaphor, a picture that only represents what we are referring to, since it has no form as such. Over the past 300 to 400 years, this astral body has changed a great deal in modern humanity. In the past, the astral body was still relatively permeated, pervaded, interwoven by all kinds of spiritual forces, and human beings' spiritual feelings and impulses still originated in this spiritual immanence within the astral body. Now, by contrast, human astral bodies have really become empty, since the power of the world of spirit is seeking, in a sense, to approach from without and reveal itself. And so we must absorb this outer spiritual world into us. And therefore our astral body has gradually become empty, and must now begin to fill again with the revelations approaching it from without. This has a very specific effect on people. And now I come to the thing which, as I said, will seem very paradoxical, just as much so as the melancholic countenance of children born today, but it is true nevertheless. The most important occurrence in the origins of the First World War, insofar as this concerns events in Berlin, occurred on 1 August, between the afternoon and the evening, roughly between 3:45 in the afternoon and 11 or 12 at night. Various people were involved, naturally people belonging to our materialistic era. This time of day is the least favorable for human decisions to be made, if they are embedded in a materialistic outlook. You see, we have entered a very, very important stage in human evolution. People today cannot make good decisions if, however strange this seems, they do not wake up with them in the morning. Increasingly, humankind will come to recognize the truth of this, dawning on them even through external realities. On awakening, a person may not be aware of such a decision, but in his subconscious he undergoes in the night something he can then experience next morning. People have not yet reached the stage of being able to prefigure things prophetically, though that is not the important thing. But if you harbor a thought at around 3:30 in the afternoon or 6 in the evening, it may be one you had in the night that has now reawoken in you. If a thought occurs to you that did not form in the night, and by contrast is drawn from the events of the day, this will not be good or useful nowadays. People today need to draw their most important impulses from the world of spirit, for these cannot be found in the physical world at all. Today we are in a sense obliged to be unreasonable. If we do not already bring our decisions and resolves with us, if we do not appeal to this coexistence with the world of spirit. The essential thing occurs at night, when our astral body is freed from the physical and etheric body, and outside them is together with the world of spirit. Then, more than was the case with our ancestors, it is prepared for the reason and decisions of the day. This is why the moment of awakening should be sacred to modern people. We should sense that we emerge then from the world of spirit and enter the physical world. And everything good, all that enables me to be a reasonable person, I gain by my interactions with the world of spirit while I am asleep, by my dialogue with the dead, whom I knew when they were alive and who have died before me. In brief, through what I experience in communion with those who are no longer in a physical body, when I am with them at night in the pure world of spirit. And out of this experience in the spiritual realm, I should develop within me an underlying sense of the sacredness of the moment of awakening. Then this underlying feeling will infuse my day with an ability to say, of one event, that a spiritual impulse will help me here, and of another that nothing can help me at present, it must remain unresolved. And I will have to wait for a new day to dawn to resolve it. This is a way of living with a spiritual orientation, really counting on spiritual factors. In our materialistic age, people, of course, do not count on spiritual factors. Instead, they believe themselves to be clever, in quotes. They believe that they have all they need for this cleverness in the instrument of the physical brain. They do not appeal to what they can acquire in the condition of separation from the physical world, when they are one with the world of spirit in their astral body. The only thing that can give true health back to humanity is the will to lead a spiritual life, to allow spiritual resolves, spiritual impulses, to inform what we do in the physical realm. This is something people ought to give full and thorough consideration to today. You see, the anthroposophic worldview cannot involve just absorbing a sum of abstract concepts as a kind of catechism, an abstract doctrine, and then feeling pleased that our worldview is different from that of others. No, the anthroposophic worldview must change the very nature of our thinking, the hue of our feeling. It must enable that great moment of awakening in spirit to occur and teach us that we must allow the spirit to illumine our life. The misfortune of modern humanity arose because the will's refusal to absorb spiritual content was driven to its furthest extreme. Never before has such an event as this catastrophic world war arisen from such outward factors, such purely material imperatives. And for that very reason it assumed such terrible proportions. Humankind should learn from this that its past thinking, feeling, and will has driven it into this catastrophe, and that we will not emerge from it, although it will assume different and diverse forms, until, with a keen power of resolve, we undertake to transform ourselves inwardly, to seek the metamorphosis of our soul. The realities I have described to you are just that. Realities. The melancholic cast in children's faces, the need to use our etheric body to comprehend the world, and the need for our will impulses to appeal, at the moment of awakening, to the glowing embers in us, if you will, of what remains with us from the sleep we have just had. This invitation to the spirit to speak in us will grow ever more vital as humanity evolves. We must grasp the fact that the anthroposophic worldview does not aim to be mere sensation for lazy souls, which is what modern mystics often are, that it is not some kind of icing on the cake of life, an outward physical delectation, but instead something inwardly bound up with the deepest impulses in culture. Likewise, we should recognize that our culture cannot grow healthy if not rendered fruitful by the anthroposophic worldview. This should be inscribed deeply in the souls of those who have become acquainted with this outlook. Thus, I wanted today to characterize one aspect of the decisive moment in world evolution in which humanity currently finds itself. Of course, if one adopts contemporary views, it is easy to judge as idiocy the things it is most necessary to say. People believe they are Christians, and yet they have not begun to understand the saying which tells us that human wisdom is often folly before God, and that all folly, and perhaps stupidity, as it appears to human beings, may well be wisdom before God. In the same way, people today so easily forget the inward impulses underlying reality, and hold fast instead to empty phrases. Today it is thought that a sermon is Christian simply because the word Christ, or Jesus, figures in it repeatedly, never mind that the actual content of what is said is not Christian at all. By contrast, if you seek to promulgate what Christ lays in our souls today, and in doing so hearken to the Old Testament saying, applicable also to Christianity, that, quote, "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord in vain," close quote, people think what you say cannot be Christian. People reel off the Ten Commandments like parrots, and repeatedly utter the name of their God in vain. Yet think the very speaking of this name makes them especially Christian. Similarly, we are not thought to be good Germans if we don't keep saying the word German. It is vital today to recognize that the deepest powers of German culture have actually been trodden underfoot in the past 30 years and can only be resuscitated again through spiritual contemplation, spiritual deepening. Looking toward the West, we find a culture in the process of making itself entirely materialistic, but which, nevertheless, has a certain inner instinctive assurance, and therefore cannot succumb entirely to materialism. Then we look toward the East, and find a culture that abhors everything Western, including us, since this Eastern culture is still embedded in an older, ancient spirituality, and in a sense is in the process of renewing it. Midway between these two, it is our task to find the right path between Western materialism on the one hand and Eastern spirituality on the other, since the latter is not appropriate for us. Here at the center of Europe, we should become aware of our great responsibility, at the same time acknowledging that we have to a very great degree lost sight of this sense of responsibility in recent decades. What has the life of spirit, cultural life, become? A mere appendage to the state, an appendage to economic life. When the state administers cultural life, especially education, this spells its ruination. We need a free spiritual and cultural life, for what the world of spirit seeks to reveal to humanity can only flow through the veins of a free cultural life. This wave, this surge of spiritual life, has to descend amongst us. It will never, ever reveal itself to those who are hamstrung as servants of the state, state officials, or who even in cultural life are beholden to economic life. It will reveal itself only to those who are immersed in the free life of spirit and culture, those who daily wrestle with a life of spirit. The times themselves are asking for spiritual, cultural life to be freed from its bondage to state and economy. These things, which in another form are propounded today as the, quote, "threefolding of the social organism," close quote, are in fact Christianity, spiritual revelations clothed in outward forms. They are what humanity needs. What alone can offer a sound foundation and the real possibility to change our thinking, to relearn what humanity so urgently needs. We have been compelled to wage war with a country that possesses a very highly developed instinctive political life, with many established colonies, along with colony-related industrialization. We waged war as a country whose industrialism is still emergent, that was still seeking to acquire colonies. Instead, we should have invoked spirit in these endeavors. What has occurred in Germany in the economic life of the past 30 years has been the very greatest disservice to the Spirit, a program that rejected spiritual cultural life, that entrusted itself to random chance, random unspiritual accident. It is as if the Spirit of the cosmos, by laying the greatest trial on the German people, wished to teach it something vital, that nothing can work without the Spirit, and that this nation must realize this. Yet it seems the Germans are very reluctant to embrace this insight, since they still appear willing to condemn anything and everything other than their lack of sense of responsibility toward the Spirit. Today we are witnessing this complete failure of awareness or self-reflection amongst people, very unqualified for this, to whom the West has entrusted governance of the destiny of the German people. The whole undertaking of those involved in this is nonsensical. There is no will to examine things properly, to look at what is really happening. And this testifies still to sleepwalking souls. They should long since have said that what happened at Versailles, what they agreed to there, is completely unfit and inadequate to meet the current world historical situation. But these things can only properly be judged when one develops awareness of responsibility toward the Spirit, acknowledging that this is indeed a vital moment in world history, and that one has a responsibility, therefore, not to regard things superficially, as usual, but to accord them their full importance. In certain fields today you can talk until the cows come home, but it will do no good. And so people find it easier to shrug their shoulders and leave it to those in charge, whether the old aristocrats, decadent aristocrats, or Marxists. The latter know least of all what is needed, may at the most have read a little of Marx's title Das Kapital. But if they do not find the will to accomplish the great transformation of soul which could enable them to think in new ways, nothing good will come of it. The revolution of 9 November 1918 was not won, for what changed then was only skin deep. All that changed really was that those who bore office were replaced by others who now bear office instead. We have to look deeper. But to do so, we need to think. And to think, we need goodwill, which arises only if we school it through preoccupation with the world of spirit. It is this preoccupation with the spiritual world which is the real balm needed to heal humanity today, the only effective one. Given this opportunity to speak together again today, this is what I wish to present to you, in relation to contemporary events, as these inevitably appear to me. I offered these thoughts in the hope that, increasingly in our anthroposophic movement, and in ever wider and wider circles, people will endeavor not only to secure inner comfort and peace of mind, but also develop something that can bear fruit for the whole cultural life of humanity. I am very pleased indeed to see how many more friends, members of our anthroposophic movement, are sitting here now than were here a year ago. May the Spirit, so resonant in the modern world and in humanity's evolution, help increase the number of our friends to the same or to an even greater extent every year. The more human souls upon whom this Spirit impresses a conviction of the need for new thinking, feeling, and will, and for a new sense of responsibility, the better it will be for the world. The end of Lecture 5.